Welcome to the Audio Renaissance presentation of The Meaning of Life, Buddhist Perspectives on Cause and Effect, written by Tenzin Gyatso, the 14th Dalai Lama, translated and edited by Jeffrey Hopkins, abridged and produced by Jill Whitesides, and read by Ken McLeod.
We begin with an introduction by translator and editor Jeffrey Hopkins. Why are we in this situation? Where are we going? Do our lives have any meaning? How should we make use of our lives? How does Buddhism view the position of beings in the world and the ways humans can make their lives meaningful? These questions about the meaning of life are addressed in a famous Buddhist painting of a wheel with 21 parts that outlines the process of rebirth. The diagram, said to be designed by the Buddha himself, depicts an inner psychological cosmology that has had great influence throughout Asia. It is much like a map of the world, or the periodic table of chemical elements, but it is a map of an internal process and its external effects. In Tibet, this painting is at the doorway of practically every temple. It vividly describes how we become trapped in a maelstrom of suffering and how this process can be reversed, showing how Buddhists place themselves in an ever-changing universe of cause and effect. By illuminating the causes behind our situation, the wheel of cyclic existence reveals how, through practicing antidotes to these causes, we can overcome the painful and limiting situations that are their effects. It shows the altruistic purpose that can make life meaningful. The description of the steps of entrapment is a call to action, for it shows how the prison of selfishness can be turned into a source of help and happiness for oneself and others. At the top right of the painting as we face it, the Buddha is standing with his left hand in a teaching pose and with the index finger of the right hand pointing to a moon on the other side at the top left. The moon symbolizes liberation. Buddha is pointing out that freedom from pain is possible, setting an optimistic tone for the whole painting. The intent of the painting is not to communicate mere knowledge of a process, but to put this knowledge to use in redirecting and uplifting our lives. The word Buddha itself makes an important point about the nature of affliction and liberation. The term Buddha is a past participle of the Sanskrit verbal root bud, which means to awaken or to spread. And thus, when put in the context of Buddhism, the verbal root means to awaken from the sleep of ignorance and spread one's intelligence to everything that can be known, to overcome ignorance and become omniscient. The general way of making a past participle in Sanskrit is to add ta, like the English ed in showed or t in built. Since to say Buddha would be non-euphonic, the T is voiced to become a D. This is how the word Buddha comes to mean one who has become enlightened, that is to say, one who has overcome the sleep of ignorance and has spread his or her intelligence to everything that can be known. The significance of the fact that the word Buddha is a past participle is that Buddhas are necessarily beings who previously were not Buddhas. They are persons who were asleep and have awakened. They were, like us, trapped in a state of cyclic existence, going from lifetime to lifetime through the sufferings of birth, aging, sickness, and death. The Buddha, whose teaching we still have, is considered to be one among many Buddhas of our era. It is said that he was actually enlightened eons ago and emanated a form called a supreme emanation body, appearing to take birth in a royal family in an Indian kingdom around 563 BC. He left the princely life and went into retreat in 524, became enlightened 6 years later, and died in his 80th year, having taught for 45 years. Prior to his enlightenment, the Buddha was an ordinary being, just like any of us. There is no one who is enlightened from the start. Each of us is or has been in a state of cyclic existence, passing through birth, aging, sickness, and death over and over due to our actions, which are largely motivated by afflictive emotions. emotions with which we afflict ourselves. For instance, when we get angry and our face turns red and contorted, we afflict even our external appearance. These afflictive emotions, negative influences peripheral to the basic pure nature of the mind, are based on an ignorant misapprehension of the status of phenomena. Not knowing how things actually exist, we superimpose onto phenomena an over-concretized status that they actually do not have. The object doesn't have to be important in the larger scale of life. It can be very small. It can be candy, a slice of pizza, whatever. Before becoming lustful or hateful, ourselves and the object are misapprehended in such a way that a veritable mess of emotions is generated. The wheel in the center of the painting is in the grasp of a frightful monster. This signifies that the entire process of cyclic existence is caught within transience. Everything in our type of life is characterized by impermanence. Whatever is built will fall down, whatever and whoever come together will separate. The wheel itself shows us how to recognize our own condition. The 21 parts of the diagram address the question of how and why we are born into self-defeating situations. What motivates virtuous and non-virtuous actions? What are the various types of lives? What is the chain of causation? The middle of the wheel depicts the basic problem. In the very center is a pig, symbolizing ignorance that drives the entire process. The pig stands for the root ignorance, which isn't just an inability to apprehend the truth, but an active misapprehension of the status of oneself and all other objects. It is the assumption that phenomena exist in a more concrete way than they actually do. Based on this misapprehension of the status of persons and things, we are drawn into afflictive desire and hatred, symbolized by a rooster and a snake, respectively. In many drawings of the wheel, these two are depicted as coming out of the pig's mouth, to indicate that without ignorance, lust and hatred are impossible. Both the rooster and the snake grasp the pig's tail in their mouths to indicate that they promote even more ignorance, confusion, bewilderment, and cloudiness. Not knowing the real nature of phenomena, we generate desire for what we like and hatred for what blocks our desires and for what we do not like. These three, ignorance, desire, and hatred, are called the three poisons. They pervert our mental outlook. The light and dark half circles just outside the hub indicate virtuous and non-virtuous actions motivated by the triad of ignorance, desire, and hatred. In the dark half circle are persons engaged in counterproductive actions. They face downward to indicate that negative actions lead to lower states. In the light half circle, persons engaged in positive actions face upward to indicate that virtuous actions lead to more favorable states. The types of states to which productive and counterproductive actions lead are depicted by six sectors drawn around the half circles of actions. Though the wheel is divided into two parts, with three sectors on the top representing the three happy transmigrations and three sectors on the bottom representing the three bad transmigrations, all are equally caught within cyclic existence. The sector at the top comprises gods. These gods lead long and enjoyable lives, but when virtuous actions that cause them to be born in that state are exhausted, they suffer through being reborn in lower levels. They are especially afflicted by knowledge near the time of death that their high state is ending due to the fact they have spent their time in enjoyment without engaging in virtuous activities. To the right of the gods is the realm of demigods, also translated as non-gods because they're minor compared to gods. A tree with plenty of fruit has grown in their land, and a demigod with a knife is trying to reach up to cut off a piece of fruit. But the fruited part of the tree is in the god's land, and he cannot reach it. The gods enjoy the fruit that grows from the land of demigods, just as industrialized countries take ore out of third world countries, or as certain multinational corporations live off the backs of poor people working for them. Because their wealth mainly benefits others, demigods are particularly afflicted by jealousy and the consequent suffering of attacking and being wounded by the gods. The sector of humans is on the top left side. Humans undergo hunger, thirst, heat, cold, separation from friends, being plagued by enemies, searching for but not finding what is desired, and having to undergo what is undesired. Also, there are the general sufferings of birth, aging, sickness, and death. The painting contains figures in a range of human activities, from butchering animals to living a monastic life. It seems to me that the range indicates that education can take place in a human lifetime. Thus, even if God's lives are loftier, they don't have the fortune of the improvement that many humans can undergo. Humans often have a mixture of pleasure and pain, such that we are not always overwhelmed by pain, but suffer enough so that we are motivated to find a way to improve our situation. On the bottom half of the wheel, we see on the left side the realm of animals, who are particularly afflicted by being used for others' purposes and by their incapacity for speech. Opposite them is the realm of hungry ghosts, who are particularly troubled by hunger and thirst. Hungry ghosts are constantly looking but are unable to find food or drink. They have huge stomachs but tiny throats such that only the smallest amounts can enter. The sector at the bottom depicts the hells, the 8 hot hells, the 8 cold hells, and neighboring hells. Neighboring hells are related as follows. A person dwelling in a hot hell, boiling in molten iron, eventually exhausts the karma that caused his birth there. That person emerges from there, and upon seeing a lovely lake, for instance, rushes into it, only to sink into a mass of rotten corpses. The point is that we find it hard to learn that the very process of attraction and repulsion, which gets us into hellish trouble in the first place, ought to be avoided entirely. The 8th century Indian scholar adept, Kamala Shila, says the sufferings of the 6 realms of beings are to be viewed not just as occurring in those types of rebirth, but also in human lives. He said, "Those afflicted by having their limbs cut off, being impaled, hanged, and so forth, suffer like hell beings. Those who are poor and deprived and are pained by hunger and thirst suffer like hungry ghosts. Those in servitude, whose bodies are controlled by others and who are oppressed, suffer from being struck, bound, and so forth, like animals." Unquote. My first teacher of Tibetan Buddhism, who had escaped the communist takeover of Tibet, used to say that the Americans were the gods and the Russians were the demigods. In this way, we can view these realms as representing types of beings in cyclic existence, but also periods in one's own or others' lives, as short as 5 minutes or months or even a lifetime. In this way, motivated by ignorance, symbolized by the 3 animals in the center, we engage in virtuous and non-virtuous actions, symbolized by the 2 half-circles, which leads to rebirth in the 6 realms of cyclic existence. What is the process? What are the stages of cause and effect? The 12 parts of the outside rim of the wheel present the process in detail. These are called 12 links, because they comprise the causal sequence of lives in cyclic existence. Let us mention them before describing them in detail. The dependent arising of cyclic existence begins with link 1, ignorance, which motivates link 2, an action. At the conclusion of the action, a predisposition is established within consciousness, link 3a, called the cause consciousness. This leads, after what can be a long time, to rebirth, link 3b, which is called the effect consciousness. The beginning of a new lifetime, link 4, is called name and form. The next stage, the development of the embryo, link 5, is called sense spheres. From formation of the body, contact is developed, which is link 6. From contact, there is feeling, link 7. From feeling, attachment, link 8. From attachment, grasping, link 9. From grasping, there develops at the end of the lifetime a stage called existence, which is the moment just before the new lifetime. It is link 10. The new lifetime begins with link 11, birth, then continues with link 12, aging and death. The first link is indicated by an old blind person hobbling with a cane, which symbolizes ignorance. Why? The person is old because the ignorance driving cyclic existence is beginningless. The person is blind because ignorance is obscured with respect to the true nature of persons and other phenomena. The person hobbles with a cane because ignorance, no matter how much suffering it creates, has no valid foundation. It isn't based on the truth and therefore can be undermined by wisdom. There are two types of ignorance, a basic form and a secondary form involved only in negative actions. The first misconceives the status of persons and other phenomena, imagining these have a concreteness beyond that which they actually have, thereby inducing all afflictive emotions. It is called a consciousness that conceives inherent existence. Thus, the basic ignorance is not just absence of knowledge of the real status of phenomena, but the active conception of the opposite, that is, the conception of inherent existence, whereas in actuality, phenomena do not inherently exist. We perceive things as though they were able to cover the parts of which they are constituted, whereas there is nothing that covers all those parts. For example, because a collection of four legs and a top is able to hold up objects, we are deceived into thinking that there is something called a table that encompasses those elements. Although phenomena do not exist inherently by way of their own character, we conceive them to do so. This is ignorance. Here, in the 12 links of dependent arising, ignorance refers to the misconception of oneself as inherently existent, and to the misconception that phenomena that are part of one's continuum, such as mind and body, inherently exist. The person is actually only designated in dependence upon a collection of mind and body. He or she is understood to be merely nominally existent. Still, this view does not make the person as if dead, or turn the person into the body on which a surgeon operates. When a surgeon cuts open the body and doesn't find any person, he or she might think there is only matter. Obviously, this is not the Buddhist position. Why would we develop compassion for others if they were just dead wood? The basic form of ignorance conceives a person who exists only in dependence upon mind and body to inherently exist, to occupy a spot in a concrete way, and then conceives of mind and body as inherently existent mine, things owned by the self or I. The other form of ignorance, the type involved only in non-virtuous actions, is a misconception about relationships of actions and their effects, not understanding that if a certain action is performed, a certain result will follow, and developing such misconceptions as pleasure will arise from theft. If we really knew what it would be like to undergo the future effects of a non-virtuous action, we wouldn't do it. We wouldn't commit murder, steal, engage in sexual misconduct, lie, talk divisively, speak harshly, chatter senselessly, and so forth. The second link, action, is symbolized by a potter making a pot. If we take our present lifetime as an example, the first link, ignorance, refers to the ignorance in a former lifetime that motivated the one action serving as the main karma projecting this rebirth. It does not refer to the ignorance that occurs throughout a lifetime, but to the one period, even just a few moments, that motivates a single significant action leading to another lifetime. For example, if we were in a bad transmigration, that is, if we were not in a human lifetime, which is considered a happy transmigration, the action that generated it could have been an act of murder. In that case, the period of ignorance would be the time in which the murder was planned, carried out, and completed. That action may take only a few minutes. It may take longer. Also, there would be additional ignorance in the form of misapprehension of the effects of murder. The main action projecting rebirth as a human has to be a virtuous action, restraining oneself from misconduct. Although there are also causes other than ethics, in order to achieve a lifetime in one of the three happy transmigrations, that is, as a god, demigod, or human, it is necessary that the projecting cause of that lifetime be an action of ethics. The third link, consciousness is symbolized by a monkey. In the 12 links of dependent arising, consciousness is of two types, cause and effect. Let's consider cause consciousness first. When the action has been completed, its potency infuses the consciousness that exists at that time. This brief period of mind, the cause consciousness, occurs immediately upon completion of the action. This consciousness is a neutral entity capable of being infused with virtuous or non-virtuous predispositions. Because it is neutral, it can be stained with any type of predisposition. For example, if one places something with a strong odor next to something neutral, the neutral substance picks up the odor of the strong one. In this way, the action leaves its imprint on the consciousness. The predisposition is a potency that has been imprinted in a certain fashion, virtuous or non-virtuous, meritorious or non-meritorious, and will lead to a future lifetime. In accordance with the strength of this potency, people die at various ages. Some people live a long time, and some do not. The potency that mainly led to this lifetime may have been established in any previous lifetime, even a million lifetimes or a million eons ago. Then, at the end of the lifetime just previous, the potency for this lifetime was nourished by certain factors. Consider the fact that when someone asks, "If there is another lifetime, what would you like to be?" we immediately say, "I'd like to be a..." This shows that we are already nourishing certain kinds of potencies. Now, regarding effect consciousness, the potency nourished this way is fully activated at the end of the previous lifetime. Between any two lifetimes, there is an intermediate state which can be as short as 1 moment or as long as 49 days. It is said that during the intermediate state, you are seeking a place to take rebirth, wandering in places where beings are copulating. But if you do not have a potency to take a certain kind of rebirth, there is no way that you can enter a specific female's womb. Leaving the intermediate state, you enter the womb of your new mother if you are taking womb birth. Called the effect consciousness, that 1 moment is the beginning of the new life. In this presentation of the 12 links of dependent arising, the first 2.5 links, ignorance, action, and cause consciousness, can occur in any past lifetime and are called projecting causes because they provide the main impetus for an entire lifetime. Effect consciousness and the 4th through 10th links from name and form through existence occur in this lifetime. They are called projected effects because they constitute the lifetime established by the projecting causes. The creation of a particular life is due to karma, and ignorance underlies the entire process. This being the case, the way to improve lives is to learn about the relationships between actions and their effects, so we can create more productive situations. The way to gain liberation is to develop wisdom that realizes the actual status of phenomena, so that the afflictive emotions that drive cyclic existence cannot get started. The 12 links, considered in order, produce 3 lifetimes. In life A, a specific occasion of ignorance motivates an action establishing a predisposition in the consciousness. That consciousness is the cause consciousness. It produces a new lifetime, life B, consisting of the effect consciousness, name and form, meaning mind and body, the sense spheres, meaning the development of the sense organs, contact, feeling, attachment, grasping, and existence. Existence is the final moment of life B, when a predisposition formerly established in the consciousness has reached maturity and is capable of producing a next birth, life C, which is birth and aging and death. The first 2.5 links are called projecting causes. They impel a lifetime. The predisposition established by the original action motivated by ignorance impels it. What it projects are the next 4.5 links, which are called projected effects. The next 3 links are called actualizing causes. They nourish another predisposition to the point where another life, indicated by the last 2 links called actualized effects, will appear. The next picture is of a person in a boat, which symbolizes name and form. Name refers to the mental consciousness, and form refers to the body. Both are located at the point of rebirth. conception. Form, at the first moment of conception, is the egg of the mother and sperm of the father. The body at that time is extremely small, like a bit of thin jelly. We are used to our present body, and it seems we will always be as we are. But in a short time, we will once again have the squishy kind of body. We had such a body not long ago, but are unable to remember. The next picture, an empty house with six windows, symbolizes the six internal sense spheres, the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mental sense powers, which open the way for production of the six consciousnesses. Here the term refers to the different moments of the initial completion of the internal sense spheres in the womb. They do not come to full development at the same time. Through the growth of the body in the mother's womb, the senses develop. At a certain point, the capacity to touch develops. At other points, the capacity to taste, to smell, to hear, and to see develop. In general, there are 12 sense spheres, 6 internal and 6 external. These are the sense powers and their objects. This includes the eye sense power, with visible forms including colors and shapes as its objects. The ear sense power, with sounds as its objects. The nose sense power, with odors as its objects. The tongue sense power, with tastes as its objects. The body sense power, with touches as its objects. And the mental sense power, with other phenomena as its objects. In the 12 links, reference is made only to the 6 internal sense spheres and their serial development in the womb, since the 6 objects are always present. The internal sense spheres are not the gross organs themselves, but subtle matter within them. Thus, there is subtle matter in the eye and the other sense organs which, upon maturation, allows us to see, hear, smell, taste, and touch. Through development of these, there is sensation in the womb. The next link, contact, is depicted by a man and woman touching or kissing. The picture symbolizes the coming together of an object, a sense organ, and a moment of consciousness. Hence, contact in the 12 links refers to contact with a sense object and discrimination of the object as attractive, unattractive, or neutral. Sense objects are always present. Thus, when a sense organ develops, then an eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, or body consciousness will be produced. Not even the sense organ can act as the substantial cause of mind. It affects mind greatly, but the experiential entity depends upon a former experiential entity. When a meditator looks into his or her own mind, he or she develops a strong realization that mind comes from mind, not from matter. The present mind comes from a former continuum of mind. Even when we are in deep sleep or knocked unconscious, there is still a subtle consciousness working. Following the end of a person's lifetime, a mental consciousness travels in the intermediate state. It then takes rebirth in the mother's womb and, after the visual sense organ develops, acts as the former moment of the first eye consciousness. Thus, the experiential entity of any consciousness comes from a former moment of consciousness. Where does the first moment of the mental consciousness of this lifetime come from? It comes from the mental consciousness of the intermediate state. Where does that come from? It comes from the mind of death. With that mind of death travel all the potencies that have been accumulated in former lifetimes. This deep mind is a repository for everything we have done. It carries these potencies until they are activated. It is the ground of all the predispositions deposited by our actions. None is lost. The 7th link in the 12 links of dependent arising is feeling. This is depicted as an arrow or stick in the eye, a dramatic picture of the centrality of feeling in daily life. The intensity indicates how pleasure and pain control our activities. During development of the fetus, we gradually develop the impression, through contact, that objects are attractive, unattractive, or neutral. From these discriminations arise feelings of pleasure, pain, or neutrality, as the individual internal sense spheres develop. Here, in the 12 links of dependent arising, feeling ranges from the first moments of pleasurable, painful, and neutral feeling in the womb to development of the capacity for orgasm. But it also refers to periods of feeling throughout the lifetime that serve as objects of the next link. The eighth link, attachment, is symbolized by a group of persons partying. This image refers to our desire to hold on to pleasure, to separate ourselves from pain, and for neutral feeling not to diminish. Although we feel attachment even in the womb, the emphasis in the 12 links is on the specific acts of attachment that nourish the karmic potency that will produce the next lifetime. I wonder whether strong dislike of a person or group can cause one to be reborn like that person or in that group. One can imagine a situation where one is reborn in the country of one's enemies from a previous lifetime, and even develops hatred for one's previous compatriots due to the attachment involved in excessive discrimination. The picture depicting the ninth link, grasping, shows a monkey grabbing at a piece of fruit on a tree. Grasping is an increase of attachment and includes strong clinging to pleasant forms, sounds, odors, tastes, and touches, as well as to bad views and systems of behavior. It is possible at any point in one's life to have attachment and grasping that potentialize a karma from the past. But near the end of a lifetime, these two links are particularly influential in shaping the next lifetime. Therefore, it is said that our attitude near the time of death is very important. If you are lying in bed and everyone around you is moaning and weeping, or if they bend over to kiss you with tears in their eyes, you can develop strong attachment, wishing to hold on to a situation you cannot hold on to. How much better it would be if people said, "You are going to die. We wanted to say goodbye." No matter how close we have been, lives are lived as investations. We meet for a while but can't stay forever. And now we are going to separate. Best wishes to you. If a person could take it, how wonderful! Otherwise, the dying person develops tremendous desire to stay where she or he cannot stay, and this can result in being reborn as a hungry ghost. As we are dying, we may think, "I'd like to be born as a great general. I'd like to be born as a monastic. I'd like to be born as someone who can help other sentient beings." The last two are marvelous. Existence refers to a fully activated karmic potency, ready to give rise to the next lifetime. It occurs during the last moment of the present lifetime. It is depicted by a couple copulating or by a pregnant woman, symbolizing that the karma nourished by attachment and grasping is ready to produce the next lifetime. Existence, the tenth link, is the fully potentialized karmic potency in a person's last moment that will produce yet another lifetime. The cause, the potency, is given the name of the effect, the existence of the new life. The effect is the existence of the new lifetime. The fully nourished potency, the cause, is given the name existence. New life is called birth, the 11th link. The picture shows a woman giving birth, though the 11th link refers to the point of conception, not emergence from the womb. The last link, aging and death, is symbolized by adults carrying burdens. One type of aging begins from the moment of conception, and the other begins with physical deterioration. Those are the 12 links of cause and effect in pictorial form. With the rooster, snake, and pig at the center, the painting graphically indicates that desire, hatred, and ignorance are at the core of the process, the root problem being ignorance. These lead to favorable and unfavorable actions. Those actions lead to birth in the six realms of cyclic existence. The process by which this takes place is the 12 links of dependent arising, which, according to this system, takes place in three lifetimes. The first 2.5 links in a past lifetime, the second half of the third link plus 7 in the present lifetime, and the last two in the immediately following lifetime. At present, we engage in ignorance. On the basis of that ignorance, we perform actions. On the basis of those actions, we establish potencies on our consciousness, cause consciousness. We begin many complete actions, which will form paths to other good and bad transmigrations. Thus, while one round of 12 links is playing out, others are starting. A potency established in the present lifetime may lead to the next lifetime, or to a lifetime 400 eons from now, whereas the potency that led to this lifetime may have come from an action 30,000 years ago. In our next lifetime, we will engage in still more ignorance. The motivation for this present lifetime came from one act motivated by ignorance in a former lifetime. This action is called the projecting or impelling cause. Ignorance, action, and cause consciousness drive the lifetime. They establish the general outlines of this lifetime, whether we are born as a human or in another transmigration. Then many other actions, called fulfilling actions, filled in the picture. Whether we are female or male, attractive or unattractive, born into a poor family or a rich one, how long we will live, and so forth. One cannot say that everything is predetermined, but we are attracted to a particular situation. When we see that, basically one action led to this lifetime and that during this lifetime we engage in a great many actions based on ignorance, we realize that we are establishing potencies for a great number of lifetimes. If we want to end this process, the weak point is attachment, since even if we have billions of potencies to take billions of rebirth, if those potencies remain unnourished, we will not take rebirth. It would be like having a room full of rice seeds and not planting them. If we can stop attachment and grasping, we can stop the process of rebirth. No matter how many potencies we had, we would no longer be born in cyclic existence. We would be freed. To make attachment impossible, we have to overcome the ignorance that is its root. It is through our not knowing the actual status of phenomena and through conceiving their opposite that attachment is possible. Buddhists do not just suppress attachment, but they understand something that undermines attachment. Desire and hatred become not suppressed, but impossible. There is something we can know that will make attachment inoperative. The basis of desire and hatred is unfounded. It rests on the shaky foundation of ignorance. Where does ignorance come from? It comes from former ignorance. We cannot assign it a beginning in time, but we can lay out a lifetime, determine its principal causes, and speak of its beginning in ignorance. Nagarjuna makes these points in his Precious Garland, where he presents the 12 links of dependent arising in three groups: ignorance, action, and the production of suffering, which are called the three thorough afflictions. He said, "As long as the aggregates are conceived, so long thereby does the conception of I exist. Further, when the conception of I exists, there is action, and from it there also is birth." Unquote. As long as the mental and physical aggregates are misconceived as inherently existing, the self, the I, also is misconceived to have the same status, as a result of which there is karma. From karma, birth occurs. Among the 12 links of dependent arising, ignorance, attachment, and grasping are grouped together as the first of these three, ignorance. An action establishes a predisposition within the consciousness, and that predisposition, when ready to produce a life, is called existence. Thus these two links, action and existence, are called by the name of the second of the three thorough afflictions, action. Nagarjuna calls seven links, from effect consciousness through aging and death, the production of suffering. Nagarjuna also says that three groups cause one another, appearing like the whirling of a firebrand. If you take a stick on fire at one end and turn it quickly at night, someone at a distance will see a wheel of fire. Similarly, the movement of these factors is seen as cyclic existence. Ignorance gives rise to action, and action gives rise to suffering. But they cause each other. For instance, suffering also causes ignorance. We respond to suffering in an ignorant way. Thus, in this sense, suffering is a cause of ignorance which causes action. Action causes ignorance, in that one tends to accumulate more wrong views, which produce more ignorance in the future. When we consider the process of cyclic existence, we see that we are drawn into good and bad situations, drawn into suffering over and over again, that we are battered and bruised. Over many lifetimes, we cry an ocean of tears. If we piled up the skeletons used by one person, we would have a mountain as large as Mount Everest. This is the condition of sentient beings. For a Buddhist, time is not defined by dates and places of birth and death. As a Buddhist, you feel that you have been present throughout time and space. The condition is not that we have only one life confined by this time, confined by this space. We have met many times. We have been through many different relationships. Value is not put just on temporary experience. Through meditation on dependent arising, we generate an understanding of our place in cyclic existence. Once we have understood our place, we can extend that understanding to others and come to feel deep compassion. In the spring of 1984, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, recipient of the 1989 Nobel Peace Prize, spoke about dependent arising in a series of lectures at Camden Hall, London. In 5 sessions over 3 days, he presented the basic worldview of Buddhism, how it views the position of beings in the world, and how it can make their lives meaningful. An underlying theme of all 5 lectures and the focus of the last was the fundamental innate mind of clear light. The Dalai Lama describes the obscuration of this pure and innermost mind and its manifestation in the wisdom that realizes the emptiness of inherent existence through implementation of tantric techniques. Indeed, the mind of clear light radiates through his presentation of the harrowing process of cyclic existence and forms the backdrop against which the process is addressed in detail. The way in which dependent arising plays itself out in the nitty-gritty of everyday life is shown in the Dalai Lama's answers to a myriad of questions from the audience. He elaborates on technical issues raised during the lectures and considers many of the difficult problems we encounter in our lives. How to deal with aggression from within and without. How to reconcile personal responsibility with the doctrine of selflessness. How to handle a loss of faith in a guru. How to face a terminal illness. How to help someone who is dying. How to reconcile love for family with love for all beings. And how to integrate practice in daily life. The Dalai Lama addresses these and other concerns with heartening directness. His intelligence, wit, and kindness suffuse the lectures. His emphasis on peaceful solutions to personal, family, national, and international problems makes a gentle though powerful argument against choosing allegiance to a particular system as a goal of life. He makes it clear that theoretical systems should be used to serve beings and not the other way round. He calls on his listeners to use ideology for the sake of betterment. I served as interpreter for these lectures and have retranslated them for this tape in an attempt to capture the nuance often missed under the pressure of on-the-spot translation. Jeffrey Hopkins. And now, The Meaning of Life, the lectures by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Lecture 1. The Buddhist Worldview. First, let me talk to the Buddhist practitioners in the audience about the proper motivation for listening to lectures on religion. A good motivation is important. The reason why we are discussing these matters is certainly not money, fame, or any other aspect of our livelihood during this life. There are plenty of activities that can bring these. The main reason why we have come here stems from a long-term concern. It is a fact that everybody wants happiness and does not want suffering. There is no argument about this. But there is disagreement about how to achieve happiness and how to overcome problems. There are many types of happiness and many ways to achieve them. And there are also many types of sufferings and ways to overcome them. As Buddhists, however, we aim not for temporary relief, but for long-term results. Buddhists are concerned not only for this life, but for life after life, on and on. We count not weeks or years, but lives and eons. Money has its uses, but it is limited. Among worldly powers and possessions, there are good things, but they are limited. However, from a Buddhist point of view, mental development will continue from life to life, because the nature of mind is such that if certain mental qualities are developed on a sound basis, they always remain and can eventually increase infinitely. Therefore, spiritual practice brings both long-term happiness and more inner strength day by day. So keep your mind on the topics being discussed. Listen with a pure motivation, without sleep. My motivation is a sincere feeling for others and a concern for others' welfare. Meditation is needed in developing mental qualities. The mind is something that can be transformed, and meditation is a means to transform it. Meditation is familiarizing your mind with something new. It means getting used to the object on which you are meditating. Meditation is of two types, analytical and stabilizing. First, an object is analyzed, after which the mind is set one-pointedly on the same object in stabilizing meditation. Within analytical meditation, there are also two types. One, something such as impermanence is taken as the object of the mind and is meditated upon, or two, a mental attitude is cultivated through meditation, as in cultivating love, in which case the mind becomes of the nature of that attitude. To understand the purpose of meditation, it is helpful to divide spiritual practices into view and behavior. The main factor is behavior, for this is what decides one's own and others' happiness in the future. In order for behavior to be pure and complete, it is necessary to have a proper view. Behavior must be well-founded in reason, and thus a proper philosophical view is necessary. What is the main goal of Buddhist practices concerning behavior? It is to tame one's mental continuum, to become nonviolent. In Buddhism, the vehicles or modes of practice are generally divided into the great vehicle and the hearer vehicle. The great vehicle is primarily concerned with the altruistic compassion of helping others, and the hearer vehicle is primarily concerned with the non-harming of others. Thus, the root of all Buddhist teaching is compassion. The doctrine of the Buddha has its root in compassion, and the Buddha who teaches these doctrines is said to be born from compassion. The chief quality of a Buddha is great compassion. This attitude of nurturing and helping others is the reason it is appropriate to take refuge in a Buddha. The Sangha, or virtuous community, consists of those who, practicing the doctrine properly, assist others to gain refuge. People in the Sangha have four special qualities. If someone harms them, they do not respond with harm. If someone displays anger to them, they do not react with anger. If someone insults them, they do not answer with insult. And if someone accuses them, they do not retaliate. This is the behavior of a monk or nun, the root of which is compassion. Thus, the main qualities of the spiritual community also stem from compassion. In this way, the three refuges for a Buddhist, Buddha, doctrine, and spiritual community, all have their root in compassion. All religions are the same in having powerful systems of good advice with respect to compassion. The basic behavior of nonviolence, motivated by compassion, is needed not only in our daily lives, but also nation to nation throughout the world. Dependent arising is the general philosophy of all Buddha systems, even though many different interpretations are found among those systems. In Sanskrit, the word for dependent arising is pratityasamutpada. The word pratitya has three different meanings, meeting, relying, and depending. But all three mean dependence. Samutpada means arising. Hence, the meaning of pratityasamutpada is that which arises in dependence upon conditions, in reliance upon conditions, through the force of conditions. On a subtle level, it is explained as the main reason why phenomena are empty of inherent existence.